Episode 9, The Answers to the Questions. After finally making one of the biggest decisions in my life, to move forward and start a new life with someone new, the more time that passed, the more questions I asked myself. The main question was, why am I doing this? That thought of being on my own for 40 years was crippling, there's no disputing that. But that thought alone wasn't enough to convince myself to be with someone new. The overriding reason was because I knew I could make somebody happy. I realised that I had far too much to give to just let it all go to waste. In fact, I felt it was criminal to do that. I'd cared for Julie for 29 years. She'd been my main priority. I'd been so used to caring for somebody, but now I had nobody. I felt I was going around twiddling my thumbs. There was a massive void in my life. If I could make somebody happy, then that would make me happy. To look after somebody again. To share all I had. To take them to places and show them experiences that they thought they'd never see. To care for them. To make them feel special. To reignite the second half of their life. All those things excited me. All those things made life worth living again. It made things seem normal in one way, but totally alien in another. Totally alien because it wouldn't be Julie I'd be caring for. There was the other side of the coin though. A side that concerned me. The thought of having a sexual relationship with somebody else. It just didn't seem right. It seemed very extreme and a slur on my relationship and life with Julie. It felt like I'd be cheating in a way. But obviously this was an all or nothing thing. It's a big part of any relationship. You're either going to totally commit to the relationship or don't bother in the first place. I decided that I needed to get the right partner first time. I didn't want to be bed hopping like some Jack the Lad, not only to show respect to Julie and my children, but more than anything, for my own self-respect. Another thing that's part of my makeup is the fear of being disingenuous. In life, I don't want to give anyone the wrong impression, never mind a potential partner. I don't want to upset or knock the confidence of a lady who might be a bit fragile after a bad or loveless relationship. Or form a relationship with someone and then upset them by having to tell them that I've had second thoughts. That would really haunt me. The good thing was, I was in no hurry. I was just relieved that I'd made the decision. Another negative thought that enters your mind is, can I take that pain again? If my new partner dies or the relationship fails and I'm left with that horrendous sorrow, can I put myself through that again? The answer is yes. Because along with the amazing support of my family and friends, something that I felt then, feel now, and think I'll always feel is, I could never be hurt as much as that again. I'm a different person in a different life. I've been through the worst time in my life and survived, and I know that nothing could make me feel that level of sadness again. It comes down to two things, experience and belief. Experience is such an important thing in life. Experience says, I've been there before, I survived. I've gained strength and wisdom from the experience. I know what to expect and how to react the next time, and therefore, I can do this. But belief is even more important in my eyes. To believe in your inner self so you can handle any situation in a calm and controlled manner, and in a way that doesn't upset your loved ones. To show them strength, which in turn gives them strength. And then there's the belief that there's life after death. I know that Julie's happy. I can tell by the way she sends me the signs. I know she's with her dad, the love of her life. I know she's totally content and out of pain. I say this to you. If Julie was given the choice to come back to earth or stay in heaven, she's staying in heaven. Why would she come back to this jungle called earth when she can stay where she is with her loved ones in total peace and tranquility? She still looks over us every day. She knows what's going on within her family. She's still guiding us. There's no difference bar, we can't see her. I talk to her and I know she's listening, as she sends me the signs to answer any questions I ask or just to tell me that she's happy with something that I've done. She has the best of both worlds, and if either of my children die, then I know that they will be with their mother again. She'll be waiting for them, waiting to greet them with open arms. When you think of it like I do, death isn't scary at all, actually. It's quite an exciting prospect. I'm really not scared of dying. I'm not even worried about how I die. Whatever death the good Lord chooses, I'm fine with that because I have faith and look forward to my next life. In my darkest moments, when I didn't want to be on this earth any longer, I truly understood how a suicide bomber felt. The thought that where you're going is a far better place than your existence on earth. A question I ask myself, and I'm sure everyone in my position would ask themselves, is, could I love someone as much as I love Julie? My original thought was definitely no, but now I think of it in a different way. This life I'm living now is different to the life I lived with Julie. I'm a different person living a different life. If Julie walked through the door now, she'd probably look at me and say, "Who are you? You're not my husband. You've changed." Julie is now in heaven, and I will always love and remember her. I did everything I could for her in life and death, and will continue to respect her for the rest of my days. I have no major regrets. I wasn't divorced from her, she died. She's not and never will be my ex-wife. Whoever is my next partner on earth will be my number one and will not be compared to Julie. Think of it this way. If you had a child and it died, you would always love and remember it. But if you then gave birth to another child, that child would become your number one. And you would love it as much, if not more, than the child who died. Julie will always be my number one in heaven, and my partner will be my number one on earth. I also thought I wouldn't want to marry again. I only ever wanted to be married to one person. But as I say, it's a different life and I'm a different person. I didn't expect Julie to die as young as she did. But if you're going to enter a relationship, then you need to enter it with a totally open mind. You can't start putting up barriers before you've even got to know someone. Your partner might feel that marriage seals the relationship, and I'm fully committing to having a relationship, so therefore, I'm totally committed to getting married to the right person. I'm very mindful that I'm not divorced. My marriage didn't fail, and I am and always will be married to Julie. Guilt is a thought that has a habit of creeping into your mind on a regular basis. It's like a stain on your favourite piece of clothing. You can't help looking at it, and each time you do, it just looks worse. Am I selfish enjoying my life again? You don't have to live in a world of sadness, and you don't have to live in total sorrow to prove that you truly cared for your deceased loved ones. They know you love them, and maybe it's time to start again, along a new path, either with somebody new or on your own as a new and invigorated person. How do you think your deceased loved ones will be feeling as they look down, pleading for you to move forward with your life? They'll be thinking that the loss of their life is a catalyst to your life being on hold. Also, think of your close family and friends on earth, who look at you and see a shell of the person they once knew. Their lives are also affected, as they constantly worry about your well-being. Rule number 3, this life that we've been given is a gift, and it's our responsibility to make the most of it. And your deceased loved ones would want you to do that. I must admit, the thought of being with somebody else was scary. But the feeling from making that decision was just pure relief. I can't tell you the difference in me. A massive weight lifted, a slight spring in my step, enthusiasm about my new life, a touch of normality again, and then intrigue. Before I considered anything else, I decided to inform my children and both mother-in-laws face to face. My children were very supportive. They just wanted to see me happy. In all fairness, both mother-in-laws were very understanding of the situation as well. I decided to make sure everyone was informed of any progress that was being made regarding relationships, the way I was feeling, and any plans I had moving forward. This was a big change for all of us, and I didn't want them to have any sudden surprises. I also realised that I would have to make certain compromises if I was to take any new relationship seriously, to be fair to any future partner. I kept in contact with the lady at the apartments. Not only was she kind and caring, but she was also interesting, funny and attractive. I took her out for dinner to continue our conversation and to get to know her better. This was my first so-called date in nearly 30 years. I must admit, I was a little subdued, overawed even, and looking back, I didn't exactly sell myself. She didn't see the real me. Well, at that time, there was no real me. I was just starting the process of discovering the new me. I discovered that she hadn't had the best of relationships in the past, hadn't been treated very well by her partners. I found that quite sad. Why would somebody treat her like that? That's somebody's daughter. She was such an interesting and lively girl. We shared many interests that Julie and I hadn't. I could pursue those interests with her and share the experience. I'd never be bored with her, that was a certainty. And I knew I could give her a good life. But it wasn't to be. The lady kindly let me down. I wasn't sad about it, a little disappointed maybe, as I saw it was a missed opportunity for the both of us. But I wished her well, and truly hope that she finds happiness. I will always be grateful to her. Meeting her in the way I did was very bizarre. How could I totally change my thinking within 8 hours of meeting her? One of the biggest decisions of my life. She relit a flame in me that I thought was extinguished forever, and redirected my path of life, and for that, I'm eternally grateful. I'm lining up my next trip, but before I do, I have a date with a lady in London. It's the end of March, and my daughter and I are off to see June Field, the medium I'd booked 6 months ago. I don't feel the same way I did then. I don't feel I need clarity that Julie's okay anymore. I've had so many signs from her and feel she's really helped me move forward with my life. But it's all paid for and it'd be good for my daughter to get some form of contact with her mother. The day was glorious sunshine and after picking up my daughter and her fiancé, we drove to South London. I wore my wedding suit for the occasion. I'm sure I looked well out of place on such a hot day in a trendy area of London, but I didn't care. I just wanted to show respect to Julie and any other spirits that showed up. I also wanted to show respect to June. She was renowned. She deserved it in my eyes. Even though COVID restrictions had been lifted, June was taking no chances and was only allowing one person in the meeting at a time. Luckily for me, she allowed my daughter to also attend. Masks had to be worn during the meeting. After a brief chat, where I made sure I gave nothing away, she described how a female spirit had been looking around the apartment early this morning. She had originally thought that she had been related to her 10 a.m. appointment, but she now realised it was Julie. "She doesn't like surprises, does she?" she said. If you were taking her somewhere, she'd want to know where it was, what it was like, what time you'd be going and for how long. This very much rang a bell when I thought about it. That's exactly how Julie was. If I'd booked a breakaway or holiday, immediately she'd want to know those questions, and then she'd look up the place and area and study it. She'd do the same if we were going to a family meeting or just visiting someone. She was also extremely punctual and was always first in work, hence the early morning visit to check out the location. June then described my daughter and I to a T. She then went on to describe my daughter's fiancé who was sat in a bar about 10 minutes walk away and then my son who was back at home. She described the mannerisms of my son with the exact same wording that Julie and I described him, which was uncanny. She described the spirit who Julie was stood with in such a way that I knew that she was with her dad. There was never a doubt in my mind that she wouldn't be with him, and her being with him was the first part of my recovery after I'd had my visitation. June then stated that Julie was stood with a brown and white dog. That was Max, who had died in 2018. We got him from the dog's home when he was about 18 months old, and he died aged 15. He was the most loyal and placid dog you could ever meet, and something that I always thought throughout our lives together was, he was extremely grateful to live with us. I was looking for a completely different type of dog, but Julie fell in love with Max. Max coming to live with us was meant to be. After that, virtually the whole conversation was about my daughter. Julie only had concerns for her. She knew the rest of us were okay and would get through this, but was concerned that our daughter was vulnerable. Julie was such a good judge of character and noticed changes in people's body language. And for her to spend most of the time giving signals to June regarding my daughter showed a real concern for her. A person seems to keep their same characteristics and mannerisms when they die and enter the spirit world. But one thing that does change is the love for their loved ones left on earth. This increases. That was very apparent with Julie. The last thing I asked June was if my son would be okay. He'd taken his mum's death very well. He's good with death, but all the same, he's only 21, and it's the quiet ones you have to watch. She assured me that he'd be fine. Hearing that was worth the trip to London on its own. I took real comfort from the trip. It confirmed that Julie was happy and had a dad and a dog as companions, that she was still the same person that had left this earth, and that I had nothing to worry about regarding our children. I also knew that everything that I believed happens when you die does happen, and that I would meet Julie again. It was also a real pleasure meeting June. She's just a normal person who you could pass in a supermarket and never know that she's right up there at the top of the tree in her chosen profession. I drove back north happy. I felt a real calmness. Contentment. The confirmation that Julie was happy was another tick in my head. I felt I'd done everything in the right order and could continue moving forward with this new life I was trying to get used to. My travels are calling me again. I'm off to somewhere I feel destined to go to, especially after giving a lift to Nick the hitchhiker. The Isle of Skye is now in my sights. Skye is a large island, a lot bigger than I first thought. So I decided I needed to locate somewhere central so travel isn't too extensive while exploring the island. I booked a static home on a farm near the capital, Portree. It's reasonably priced and in a handy location to explore the island. It's not the Ritz, but it's quiet there and has everything I need. But 2 days before my trip, I get a message from Airbnb stating that the owner is cancelling my booking due to a problem with the boiler. Airbnb return my payment and give me an extra £60 compensation for my inconvenience. It's late notice, so I quickly start looking for somewhere new. Everywhere else is so much more expensive. A cottage much further north is jumping out at me. It's a lot more expensive, but if I go for a day less and put the £60 towards, then I can justify it. So I'll book it. I drive for 8 hours through the night to Skye. I thoroughly enjoyed the journey, including an amazing 40-minute stint where I passed countless numbers of deer stood on or beside the road. It's early morning when I cross the Skye Bridge onto the island and head north. It's 5 a.m. and dark. I stop for a rest to stretch my legs. I've only stopped once en route to grab a quick coffee. Adrenaline has kept me wide awake for the 8-hour journey, but now I've reached my destination, I feel intoxicated. After a short rest, I head north, and as the sun rises, I notice that the island looks quite bleak. Where are all the trees? I head to the old manor store on the northeast coast. It's before 7:30 a.m. when I leave the car and start the hike to the old man. Store is a collection of rock pinnacles. It can be seen for miles. It's like nothing I'd seen before. Apparently, it's 2,800 million years old. Do you know how I felt when I climbed up and stood at the foot of the old man? Small and insignificant. There's a magic about this island. The tales of giants, fairies and demons are legendary. As I stood there looking down at the coast, I imagined people thousands of years ago doing exactly the same thing as I'm doing now. Your mind can't help but wonder when stood in such a place alone. Just me and the old man of store. I climb up and down between the pinnacles and test myself scrambling up the sides of the banking. I'm not an experienced climber, but I'm here for a reason, to find myself. If I'd lost my footing, I wouldn't have died, but I would have definitely hurt myself. But I have that carefree thinking nowadays that says, does it really matter? Eventually, I head back down to the car park, passing a procession of tourists on the way. When I arrive at the cottage later in the day, I'm greeted by Helen the co-owner. I immediately get a huge warmth about Helen. I feel a connection with her. She shows me around the cottage, which is absolutely perfect, with a log burner, tons of character and a view of the lot from the front door. I'm thinking to myself, this is meant to be, when Helen mentions two things that cements a thought in my mind. A thought that says, there's a reason why I'm here and not in Portree. Firstly, she tells me that the cottage was booked for a week, but was cancelled 2 days ago. Exactly the same time as mine was cancelled. Then she shows me a lovely little hut to the side of the cottage where she practices as a Reiki healer. For the last few weeks before coming to Skye, I'd been trying to contact a local Reiki healer who was highly recommended. For some reason, even though I'd contacted him on numerous occasions, he'd never replied. I felt I wanted to try Reiki to see if I could enhance my spiritual side or for it to prompt me to my next port of call. So to find my new landlady was a Reiki healer, and her studio was directly next door, was a little spooky to say the least. I settled down for the night with a log burner blazing, thinking, drifting away in my own little world. I think back to my first night in Drumnadrochit, which was only 4.5 months ago. Mentally, I feel I'm in such a better place. Momentum has had a massive part to play. But though I feel totally comfortable and happy in the cottage, I still feel that emptiness inside, knowing the real reason why I'm here. But I'm also here to be at one with nature, to connect with Julie without distraction, to experience places I hadn't seen before, but mainly to be free so my mind could wander. I know the answers are all around and inside me. I just need to bring them to the forefront, then open my eyes. But this can only be achieved in an environment with no distraction. I know I still have a hell of a long way to go, but meeting Helen has made me realise that coming to Skye was the right thing to do. There were surprises in store on this island, and was a vision I'd had about to become real?